You know that saying about shouting fire in a crowded theater?
Yeah, classic example of the limits of free speech, right?
Exactly. But what about when that fire is like hate speech aimed at a community?
Ooh, now you're talking about a whole other level of complexity.
We're diving into a case today, Colin v. Smith, that really pushes those boundaries.
A case that forces us to ask, how do we balance free speech with protecting people from hate?
It all started back in 1977 in Skokie, Illinois.
Skokie had a large Jewish population.
Many of whom were Holocaust survivors.
Imagine the reaction when a group of Nazis announced they wanted to march right through town.
I can't even begin to imagine.
Frank Collin and the National Socialist Party of America, they weren't just planning a quiet walk.
Oh, no.
Think swastikas, Nazi uniforms, distributing anti-Semitic literature. It was meant to provoke.
A deliberate act of intimidation.
Especially given Skokie's history.
So, community already deeply wounded.
Exactly. It was seen as a direct attack on their safety and well-being.
Understandably, this sparks outrage. But instead of meeting hate with hate, Skokie turned to the law.
They fought back with not just one, not two, but three ordinances.
Wow, three, all aimed at stopping the march.
Each one targeting a different aspect.
Like a legal 1-2-3 punch. Okay, I'm intrigued. Break it down for me.
All right, so first, Ordinance 994. This one required a $350,000 insurance bond.
$350,000 back in 1977.
That's over $1.7 million in today's money for any public assembly.
Wow. Talk about discouragement. They basically tried to price the NSPA out of existence.
It was a creative strategy, that's for sure.
So what about the other two ordinances? What were they going for there?
Okay, so Ordinance 995 was more direct. It banned any materials promoting hatred, you know, towards any racial, religious, or ethnic group.
Seems like a pretty reasonable response in the circumstances.
A clear message that hate speech is not welcome, but things didn't exactly go according to plan.
Oh, I was going to say it seems straightforward.
Well, their third ordinance, Ordinance 996, focused on the uniforms.
Ah, the Nazi uniforms.
Yeah, it banned public demonstrations by political parties if their members were wearing military-style uniforms.
So no more swastikas on display. Okay, so Skokie threw everything they had at this. What did the NSPA do?
They did not back down. They argued each ordinance was a violation of their First Amendment rights.
The right to free speech, even if that speech is hateful.
Exactly, and this is where things take a turn. At first, it seemed like Skokie would win, and Illinois State Court agreed with them.
They blocked the march.
Yep, issued an injunction. But then, both the Illinois Appellate and Supreme Court stepped in.
Wait, they overturned the injunction. Why would they do that? I mean, Nazis, Holocaust survivors, the potential for violence.
Well, the higher courts focused on something called prior restraint. They felt the ordinances were basically censorship before anything had happened.
So you're saying you can't shut down speech just because you think it might cause trouble?
Basically, the courts were saying you can't silence someone just because you don't like what they have to say, even if it's offensive.
So even in a case this extreme, they prioritized the principle of free speech.
Yes, and it gets even more complicated because the NSPA didn't stop there. They went to federal court.
They were serious about this.
They filed a lawsuit under 42 USC Section 1983 in the Northern District of Illinois, determined to make their voices heard.
So they weren't just going to quietly fade away. What happened at the federal level? Were they more receptive to their arguments?
Actually, yeah. Judge Bernard Decker sided with the NSTA. He struck down all three ordinances.
Really? Wow, that must have been a major blow to Skokie.
It really raised questions about the limits of free speech, even in the face of such blatant hate. But Skokie wasn't done fighting.
So they appealed.
Yep, all the way to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's where things get really interesting.
Okay, you've definitely got my attention now. So tell me, what happened at the Seventh Circuit?
That's where we get the landmark decision that we're going to break down for you today. A decision that shapes our understanding of the First Amendment even now, all these years later. The Seventh Circuit really dug into those ordinances. You know, Colin v. Smith is a fascinating case study. Like, it shows just how tough it is to put restrictions on speech, even when it's super offensive.
So let's break it down, ordinance by ordinance. First, that insurance requirement, Ordinance 994.
Right. On the surface, it seems almost reasonable, like a way to manage public events, but well, the court saw it as targeting the NSPA specifically for their message.
Because of what they were saying, not the event itself.
Yeah, and the First Amendment, you know, it protects speech regardless of whether people like it or not.
So making it financially impossible for them to hold the rally, that's a problem.
Exactly. The court called it prior restraint, silencing speech before it even happens, a big no-no under the First Amendment.
So you can't just hit a group with a giant fee because you disagree with them?
Nope. Not if you want to stay on the right side of the Constitution.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about the hate speech ban? That's Ordinance 995. That seems more straightforward, doesn't it? Like, surely the court recognized the potential harm there.
Well, it's trickier than it appears. Hate speech is a really murky area legally. Skokie argued that what the NSPA was planning fell under the fighting words exception.
Right, like shouting fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah.
Words that create immediate danger.
That's the classic example. But the court brought up Brandenburg v. Ohio.
Another First Amendment case.
Yeah, this one set a really important standard, the imminent lawless action standard.
So to restrict speech, it can't just be offensive, it has to be directly causing danger.
Right, it has to be inciting violence or illegal activity that's about to happen, like right then and there.
So even though the NSPA's message was awful, Skokie couldn't prove it would directly lead to violence.
It was more about potential emotional harm, you know, and bringing up past trauma, which are valid concerns, but not enough to justify restricting speech under the law.
It's interesting how the law doesn't always line up with what feels right morally.
Yeah, that's a key takeaway here. You can't silence someone just because what they're saying is repulsive or causes emotional distress. The bar is very high, and Skokie didn't clear it.
Two down, one to go. What about the uniform ban, Ordinance 996, the Nazi uniforms? It does seem like there should be some limits on symbolic speech, especially when those symbols are so tied to violence and oppression.
It's a tough one for sure. This case actually happened before a really important Supreme Court ruling, R.A. v. St. Paul. That one looked specifically at content-based discrimination in symbolic speech, you know, targeting the message behind the symbol.
So how did the Seventh Circuit deal with the uniform ban without that later guidance?
They focused on whether the act of wearing the uniform itself, you know, without any other context, was disruptive or threatening. They relied on Tinker v. Des Moines.
So just wearing the uniform without any other actions or words wouldn't necessarily count as inciting violence.
Exactly. They were trying to separate the expressive act, wearing the uniform, from people's reactions to it, which is, you know, a pretty fine line.
I can see why people still debate this case. So the court struck down all three ordinances. Was that unanimous?
Oh, there are definitely some strong opinions on both sides. Judge Sprecher wrote a really compelling dissent worth reading. He was drawing on an earlier case, Beauharnais v. Illinois.
Fill me in on that one. I'm not familiar with it.
Beauharnais was all about group libel, like speech that defames a whole group of people. Sprecher argued the NSPA's message could fit that category, especially given Skokie's Jewish community and, you know, the Holocaust.
He was saying the context, the potential for harm, was so specific and intense that it should be an exception to free speech protections.
Yeah, he felt that Skokie's situation justified a different approach. But the majority countered with a landmark case, New York Times Coe v. Sullivan.
Ah, that rings a bell. Wasn't that the one that made it really hard to prove libel?
Yes, especially when it comes to public figures. The Seventh Circuit pretty much said Beauharnais was outdated, that the right to free speech, even hateful speech, had to be upheld.
So even when it's deeply upsetting and offensive to a community, the principle of free speech takes precedence. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, free speech isn't just about protecting the things we agree with.
Exactly. It's about protecting ideas that challenge us, even the ones that disgust us. It's about making sure everyone has a right to speak, even if we hate what they have to say.
Were there any other opinions that added to this complicated landscape?
Yeah, Judge Wood also wrote a concurrence. He agreed about striking down the ordinances, but his focus was a little different. He thought they were too vague.
So even though he agreed with the outcome, he had problems with how Skokie tried to do it.
He felt like the way they wrote those ordinances, they were open to abuse. He cited Grained v. City of Rockford, which basically says laws about speech have to be very specific, narrowly tailored.
So Skokie's good intentions weren't enough. They could have ended up silencing other kinds of speech, too.
Exactly. His point was laws have to be carefully crafted. You know, they have to respect the complexities of free speech.
This is a fascinating case. All the twists and turns, the legal arguments. But let's zoom out for a second. Why does a case about Nazis in Skokie from 1977 still matter today? Why is Colin v. Smith important now?
That's the big question, right? I think This case still sparks debate because it gets at something fundamental about tolerance in a free society. Like, it reminds us that the First Amendment isn't about protecting the easy stuff, the comfortable speech.
It's about protecting the stuff that pushes us,
yeah.
Even the stuff we find repulsive.
Exactly. Colin V. Smith really solidified that. It really makes you think, you know? What kind of world would we be in if the court had sided with Skokie back then?
Yeah, like, would we be in a place where the government has even more power to silence people, even if their ideas are hateful?
It's a slippery slope, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what the First Amendment is meant to prevent. It's hard sometimes, but it forces us to accept that free speech means tolerating speech that we just hate.
It means accepting that people will say things that make us angry, that upset us, even things that might seem dangerous.
But it also reminds us that free speech isn't just about rights. It's about responsibilities, too. We
yeah.
can't just say anything we want with no consequences.
So what does that look like? What are those responsibilities that come with free speech?
I think it means being a critical thinker. You know, not just accepting everything you hear, but really analyzing it and engaging in civil discourse, even when you disagree strongly with someone. And I think maybe most importantly, it means countering hate speech with more speech, not with censorship.
So using our own voices to challenge bigotry and prejudice, not trying to shut down the voices we disagree with.
Exactly. Standing up for those who are marginalized, those who are being silenced, creating a society where everyone feels safe and respected, even when faced with these hateful ideologies.
Colin V. Smith isn't just some old case. It's a challenge we face every single day, especially now with social media. Everyone's got a platform.
It's like, how do we make sure free speech doesn't turn into a tool to silence people? How do we have real conversations and debates without resorting to censorship? Those are the questions we have to wrestle with, you know, especially in the digital age.
This deep dive has really been something. It's a good reminder that the law isn't just about abstract ideas. It's about people.
Yeah.
It's about communities. It's about figuring out how to balance these competing rights and values.
And it leaves us with a big question, something to think about. How do we protect free speech, all speech, even the ugly stuff, and also create a world where everyone feels safe, respected, and heard, even when they're facing hate and offensive ideologies?
It's a tough question, but an important one. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Colin V. Smith. It's a case that really makes you think and reminds us of how powerful and how complex the First Amendment truly is.